the side of the car, across the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of you.
The only people that really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed his plane was really low. He went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammer Lane Legends. I am your host, Tony Merkel.
And I am Brian Merkel.
And we're really glad that you're here. If you have a crazy and wild experience from the road, please shoot us an email. Our email address is hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. That's hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. Or go to the website, hammerlanelegends.com. Hit the contact section and you can reach us that way as well. Either way works for us. Just get a hold of us. And if you're out in the road, whether you're a truck driver, you're driving for a sewage company, or wherever you're driving, and you want to be prepared for an emergency, go to preparewithhll.com. That's preparewithhll.com, because we sell emergency preparedness food right there for you. And not just the food, but a lot of supplies too. So just go to preparewithhll.com and you can stock up on emergency supplies that will last up to 25 years shelf life. And right now, if you get a 4-week supply of food, we'll knock $100 off for you. That's a great deal. You're not going to get that deal in your grocery store. I promise you that.
No, they're not knocking $100 off of anything.
No. You walk into a grocery store and you get $300 worth of food and you say, "Can you take $100 off of it?" And they're like, "You got coupons?" You know? We don't got coupons. We got our good word. And we're going to tell you right now, we're going to knock $100 off for you if you get the 4-week supply of food at preparewithhll.com. Dad, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. So before we get into this week's show, which we have Hassan coming on the show, we also have some voicemails that we want to get into this week. And you have not heard any of these, right?
I have not.
No. And so I like doing it this way. I like kind of letting you hear. I listened to them beforehand, but I like letting you hear it live on air so that you get authentic reaction from my dad. And we're going to start off with Haley.
Okay.
And Haley checks in with us on the voicemail line. Dad, the voicemail line is something that we sometimes forget to talk about, but I think it's a great thing for people to kind of check out and leave us a voicemail if they are somebody who has something they want to share on the show, but they don't know if it's actually, you know, show worthy, or they're a little shy or something, and you don't want to talk to me because I'm a yakky kind of guy. So go ahead and leave us a voicemail. And Dad, if you could, let us know what the voicemail line number is, if you can read it right there. I'm sorry.
It's like at an angle to me.
Yeah.
Like I memorized this thing. It's 515-585-MERK. That's 515-585-MERK or 6375.
That's right. And if, on the voicemail line, you get 15 minutes to talk to us. And if you want, you can call back and talk to us again for 15 minutes if you didn't get enough time. But hey,
if you have that much to say, why don't you just send us an email? We'll bring you on the show.
Right. I mean, if you're going to talk for 30 minutes to a voicemail, you might as well have somebody yakking back to you and having a good time. And if you're going to dedicate 30 minutes of your life, you might as well dedicate it to talking to us, right?
Yes. We'd love to hear you.
Yeah, the voicemail line is a great tool, though, and people seem to enjoy it when they call and stuff. So here's Haley right now.
Hey guys, my name is Haley and I'm from Phoenix, Arizona. I don't have a story because I'm not a trucker, but I just wanted to say that with that being said, the fact that I'm not a trucker, I love your guys' show. I listen to it every time you guys post a new episode. Keep up the good work. I love the stories and I love the laughter and the laid-back nature of the show, and it would also be super awesome if I heard myself on the show. So keep up what you're doing. I think that this voicemail thing is awesome and such a good idea. And yeah, I appreciate you guys and all the work that you do. Thank you and keep the stories coming.
Well, Haley, you made it onto the show because you called, not just because, but you called on my birthday, 10/23. So, hey, that's a guarantee getting onto the show, Dad.
That is so awesome. Thank you, Haley, for calling. That was really neat. And we love to have people call and even just say, hey, I'm listening to your show and we enjoy it. So thank you very much, Haley. That was neat. That was really neat.
Yeah, it's nice to hear from people, especially like, you know, the people who don't drive for a living.
Exactly.
And they're just out there and they're actually gaining from the show, which is really cool. You know, like I just thought of it this past week and I did it. I don't think I even told you. I was listening to the show and I was listening to the content that we have, and we generally do have a lot of laughter. And I think Haley kind of jogged my memory with this, that like it's a lighthearted show. It's kind of fun. So what I did was I actually created a subcategory for the show on iTunes, and I put it underneath comedy. And so,
well, some weeks it is.
Yeah. So we're kind of a comedy show as well. I mean, we're not here busting jokes, but it's just laughter, lighthearted conversation around the driving industry and just kind of jobs. Sometimes we have people on the show that, you know, they drive to a location and they talk about the jobs there. Like when we talked to the guy that did trash, you know, he's driving for a living, but most of his stories were from, you know, dealing with customers,
dealing with the people,
grabbing their butt while they're chasing after him. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
It's hilarious. So I thought, hey, you know, we're kind of a comedy show, but, you know, that was Haley. Haley, thank you very much for calling in the show. And next up, we have a guy who drives trailer for Pitt, Ohio.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we have Pepe. He called in, and he's out of the Baltimore terminal, and here's Pepe.
Hey, Tony. Hey, Brian. It's me, Pepe, from the Baltimore terminal, from Pitt. Hey, yeah, Tony. It's the same guy that told Dean about your other show. My bad, bro, my bad. Hey, I got a little story that happened to me when I started with Pitt. It's when I started here 2 years ago, the only thing I heard was horror stories about we're driving in D.C. And the first time I went to D.C., they decided to send me with a 45-foot trailer down to D.C. When I grabbed my book and I looked at it, everyone was like, oh, my God, you're going to D.C. Oh, my God. Watch out with the low bridges and stuff like that. The only thing you heard was, the only thing you hear is horror stories from down there. So, you know, my anxiety started like acting up. I'm like, you know what? I got this. I went down there, made my first stop, got it off, made my second stop, got it off. When you go to DC, there is a lot of low bridges. Restricted areas, you know, it's the capital. So one-way streets, there's 1,000 people out there, cars parked everywhere. And here comes me, here comes the Puerto Rican, coming down with that 45-foot trailer, does not know where he's going. So I had to make a delivery in a hotel. So when I get there, their receiving is underneath the building. So I pull up and I'm like, yep, this ain't gonna happen. I call dispatch. When I'm talking to dispatch, let them know that I can't fit the trailer in there. Police cop runs by, stops right next to me and tells me, hey, you have to move the truck, you're blocking traffic. So I'm in that moment, I'm with dispatch. I'm like, hey, I gotta move. I'm gonna keep on going, just letting you know I can't make this delivery. It's underneath the building. I can't fit a trailer in there. So they're like, all right, go ahead, keep on going. When you go to, a federal building, you gotta go to another place first in the outskirts of DC to get the freight scanned. Obviously, I didn't know that. So I am driving down DC. I'm getting lost because there's like restricted, no trucks, low bridges, and this and that. I'm swerving left and right, going here, going there. I get to the street and I'm like, oh man, this looks like a nice street that I can't go down. My GPS is telling me to go down this street and I'll be there in 2 minutes. I'm like, perfect. So I go down this street and I'm like, starts getting tighter and tighter and tighter. I'm like, I'll make it. Good, I'll make it. GPS tells me, make a right turn. And I go ahead, make a right turn. Big mistake. When I made a right turn, obviously, my first time in D.C., I don't know where the hell I'm going. I was right next to Capitol Hill. I apparently went through a back way, And in a blink of an eye, I had three unmarked cars boxed me in with guns in hand. They came out of their cars and walked into the straight to the truck. I locked in my brakes. I raised my hands. And he started screaming at me, so I put the window down with one arm up. I'm putting the window down, and I'm like, yeah, what happened? What did I do? He's like, where are you going? I'm like, I'm just trying to find, my GPS told me to go here, trying to find this place. You know where you at? I said, no, it's my first time down here. And he starts, screaming at me and stuff like that. And, I'm talking about, it's like four or five cops, guns in hand, fingering the trigger, and I'm like, yo, I don't know where I'm at. Just, how do I get here? He said, you cannot come down the street. How the hell you got here? And I started explaining to him, and he's like, you have to turn around right now. And all this guy is screaming at me, this federal agent. I'm like, you know what? How do I go back on 50? Tell me how to get back on 50, because I'm getting out of, I'm leaving D.C. right now. So the officer's like, you're going to follow me. You're going to follow me till I put my blinkers on and tell you to go. I say, you know what? That's perfect. Raise my window, they blocked traffic, and I literally got escorted out of D.C. because of that situation. I called the terminal, and I told them straight up, I'm bringing this trailer back. I'm not going to come down here again with the trailer. And I left. Terminal, what happened? And I'm like, and I explained to them, I said, I am getting escorted as we speak by federal agents that pulled me to the side on gunpoint because I made a wrong turn and I was just literally feet away of Capitol Hill. So, yeah, I had to come back to the terminal. And that was a fun conversation that I had with the manager when I got back. He understood, but my anxiety down there is that day I still got PTSD. Anytime I have to go down there with the straight truck, I refuse to go down there with a trailer. Yeah, that's my story. Let me know. Call me if you can. We'll chit chat a little bit more. Talk to you later, Tony.
I mean, what do you say to that? Woo! That is awesome, man. I mean, I've had my moments when I was a city driver, and that takes the cake. I mean, you're running down the road, you're just following your GPS, and out come the cops with the guns drawn.
These are like federal agent cops too,
Wow, yeah. These aren't messing around kind of guys.
Yeah, these aren't like. Wow. Traffic control. These are guys. They're like, how'd you get here? He's like, I made a left, I made a right, and here I am. Ta-da!
What do you mean, how'd I get here? I drove. What are you talking about, Mr. Police Officer?
Yeah, I mean, they're thinking the worst. It's their job to think the worst,
It is.
And man, Pepe, man, that was a story. Man, that was
that
a story.
Was. Thank you so much for calling, Pepe. That was so cool to hear from you.
Yeah, and I actually text him and stuff, and we've been talking, and I'll say it here too. Pepe, if you ever want, man, you got an open invitation to come up to the studio and sit here in person and chat with us.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I know it's a bit of a drive. I think he's in Virginia, but if he ever has the time and he wants to do it, he's more than welcome to come on in studio, fellow pit driver.
Yeah.
I can't think of a better guy in the studio. But that was some great voicemails. And so people, if you guys are interested in leaving some voicemails just to say hi or anything, if you have stories, feel free to call us like Pepe and Haley did. It's 515-585-MERC or 6375. Now, today we got Hasan on the show. And I think when I first started the introduction, I called him Hasan.
Yep.
That's my bad, brother. I'm sorry. It's Hasan.
Yep.
And we have Hasan coming on. And he actually contacted the other show, The Confessionals. And he actually had a UFO sighting here in Pennsylvania while he was driving. He's an over-the-road driver from Dallas. And he had a very interesting UFO encounter while he was driving. And so we decided to bring him on this show. And we talked about it for a while, his UFO sighting. Mm-hmm. We talked about UFOs and what we think they are. And then we got into talking about a little bit of his job and some of those things. So let's bring on Hasan right now.
All right, today we got Hasten on the show. Hasten, how you doing, man?
I'm good.
Awesome, man. So, Hasten, you contacted my other show, The Confessionals. And you contacted us because you're an over-the-road truck driver, and when you were in Pennsylvania, you saw something in the sky. I don't want to ruin the story.
Right, so exactly.
If you could, just kind of walk us into what you saw, man.
Yeah, I was driving. I picked up a load in Massachusetts. I still remember the exact date. You know, when you see something like that, it's hard to forget the date, right? It was on June 26th last year, 2019. And I was driving on I-81 South in between Scranton and Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And I saw this weird-looking craft in the sky. And at first I thought, you know, maybe it's a helicopter, you know? But then I kept taking turns looking at it and looking at the interstate. And as it slowly started flying over me, I noticed, you know, it looked weird looking. And it had like a white light blinking on the top. And the sun had barely set, because, you know, like the sun barely sets where you can still, there's just a little slit of sunlight. So there was just still barely a little sunlight when I saw it. And, you know, I kept taking turns looking at it, looking at the interstate. And then when, you know, I looked at it fly right over me, and to my shock and horror, it was like triangular shaped, and it had like a white beam light in the middle. And then all three corners of it, it had like a white light on it. And, you know, I only saw it for 2 or 3 seconds, you know, and it was flying low. It was only like 300 feet over me. And it was like, at first I was in disbelief, like, oh my God, you know, this is a UFO. And after I saw it, in the next couple of weeks, I started doing research, you know, and I learned what I saw. It's called a black triangle UFO. And, you know, they're seeing like how I saw it. You look it up on the Wikipedia and they're seen mostly flying low over interstates. Like I saw it flying low. And they're mostly seen like in kind of populated areas, because I was in between Wilkes-Barre and Scranton, which are pretty big cities in Pennsylvania. And I called the local police department, you know, to ask them the next couple weeks if they heard any reports. Or I even called a newspaper, and they said that no one reported anything, because, you know, I was just so shocked. You know, by seeing it, you know, I was trying to figure out if anyone else saw it. I kept looking it up on the internet, and I did see other people that reported seeing, you know, like a black triangle shaped UFO, but it wasn't that same night that I saw it. Like, you know, like I saw one was like back in April or May, you know, about a month or two before I saw the one that I saw.
So when you saw this, if I remember correctly, you said that there was a white beam light in the middle, and then there were, was it white lights on every corner then too?
Yeah, like there were lights on every corner. And I forgot to mention earlier, because like, remember how I said there was just a little slit of sunlight? Mm-hmm. I saw it had like a grayish metallic color on it, because there was just barely a slit of sunlight, because the sun had barely gone down. And I did see it had like a grayish color on it.
So with it still being light out a little bit, were you able to see any texture on this craft? Was it completely smooth, or was there any kind of piping or, you know, wiring or anything?
I like I said, I barely saw it for like 3 seconds, because yeah. I was driving on the interstate. I just saw it briefly for like 3 seconds fly over me. So I didn't really have time to look. I was just so shocked to see in the lights on the bottom. I didn't really look at anything else, you know?
Yeah, I understand. The middle light that you saw in this thing, and you call it a beam light, is it because it was shooting light down?
Well, it was probably like a regular car light or a light on a semi. It was just a big white light. Like it wasn't actually, I didn't actually see a beam coming down off the road or anything. It was just like a regular light that you probably see on a semi or you know, plane or whatever, but it was on the bottom of it.
So when you see this, you're driving truck down the highway and you see it, did you ever think that people would actually believe you?
Well, no, I mean, because, you know, most people won't believe you unless you have evidence.
Yep,
you know, I posted it on my Facebook. I think that same night or the next night. And I even reported it to the UFO reporting station or whatever they're called in Washington.
Yep.
But I asked to remain anonymous because, you know, I don't know, because, you know, you hear about government and people trying to cover it up. I didn't want anyone coming after me. So I anonymously reported it to them in Washington.
Don't blame you. I hear that. You know, that's always the one of the odd things with something like this is that it they always seem to happen so quickly and catch us. And they do. They catch us by surprise. That, you know, yeah. To try and figure out what you're looking at when you're looking at it. And of course, I mean, you're driving a truck when you're seeing this thing, you know, it's crazy. It's just, you know, it's just the way it's the way UFO encounters seem to go. You know, when people see them, oftentimes they're not sitting, you know, still at their house. I mean, it does happen. But for the most part, people see them when they're doing something and they're like looking at it and you have a very short amount of time to react and respond to what yeah. you're looking at.
Yeah,
I know. It was, yeah, it's pretty shocking because, you know, I'm not going to risk, you know, committing manslaughter, just stopping the truck and, you know, having someone hit me head on and to just look at it. You know what I mean? I'd rather not take that risk, just keep going and doing my job, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, after I saw it a couple weeks later, when I came back to the Dallas Metroplex, I went to a Walmart. I bought a pair of binoculars, and I've had binoculars in my truck ever since I saw it.
So do you think if you would have stopped the truck, you would have been able to see it more? So as in, like, it wasn't moving that fast. You were kind of just flying by.
Yeah. It was kind of going a little slow. That's why at first, like I said, I thought it was a helicopter because it wasn't even flying fast, you know. Planes fly, you know, they have to fly fast, right, so they don't crash. But yeah, if I was able to pull off to the side and see it, I would have been able to, you know, get my phone out or something and record it or something.
Yeah. So what, I mean, after you see this, you do some research and stuff. I mean, I know the thought had to cross your mind as to what are UFOs, and, you know, I'd like to hear what you think. I mean, you saw something that, you know, clearly isn't normal. Do you think that these things are extraterrestrial? Do you think it's, you know, more the government having access to technology and crafts and stuff that we just don't know about?
I believe that it's like a spiritual entity, because I, you know, I'm kind of religious, and I believe that, just like, you know, there are good angels and then there are demons, you know, I mostly believe that they're not, you know, physical, you know what I mean? Like, they're like spiritual realm. Like, some of them could be demonic or some of them could be angelic.
Interesting.
I mean, that's mostly what I believe.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of people that actually take that approach on things.
Oh, you can go on.
No, go for it.
Because, you know, all the movies that Hollywood has made about these creatures, there are these evil creatures that destroy people's lives, you know, kidnap their children and they never seen again, or kidnap one of their family members, you know, and that's what demons do, right? Demons destroy people's lives. So I believe, like, you've seen that movie, The Fourth Kind, right? How they show that kidnapped Dr. Abigail Tyler's daughter and she never sees her again. And then the movie, the alien says it's God, you know, but it has like a demonic voice to it. So I mostly believe it's demonic, you know, in my opinion.
So along that angle of thought, thinking back to what you saw, you believe it's more on the lines of demonic. Did it look, though, as if did it look spiritual to you, or did it look like something like almost very physical, but you believe that, you know, even though it's physical, it's on the spiritual plane?
Well, that's the crazy thing, because like I said, I called, you know, a police station locally, I think in Wilkes-Barre, and then a newspaper, and no one else reported seeing it. So it's almost like I'm the only one that saw it, you know, like it was like a ghost or something, you know. So I think it was probably more of like a paranormal spiritual thing that I saw, you know, cause just like people see ghosts and stuff, like, because I was the only one who saw it and no one else reported seeing it. Yeah. So
Well, there are, when people see UFOs, a lot of times people talk about having other experiences along with a sighting that tend to be more on the spiritual plane of things. Anything from, you know, the gray entities that people talk about, which a lot of people, you know, do attribute to demonic entities, to even the idea of Bigfoot. People talk about seeing these Bigfoot sightings and also UFOs in the same area at the same time. And it just kind of makes you wonder what all that stuff is. And it's very interesting. I actually saw something, not what you saw, but similar in Pennsylvania going down the turnpike. I saw what I'd call a checkmark UFO. It looked like a V, only one side was shorter than the other. And I saw it several times. It wasn't just one time I saw it. I saw it.
Oh, go ahead. Were you formerly a truck driver?
Oh, we're both, me and my dad are both truck drivers now.
Yeah, we're both truck drivers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I do remember Marshall, the guy who told me about y'all. He said that y'all were formerly truck drivers, the one that told me about your podcast.
Yep, we're both still truck drivers.
Yeah, we're still driving truck, man. We're still driving trucks. So, yeah, I was driving the truck down the turnpike heading towards Philly, and I saw what I call the checkmark UFO, and it wasn't moving. It was hovering over the highway. And I saw it for miles. I probably saw it for about a mile or two coming up to it, because I could see there's something different about it. Because driving that turnpike, you see the planes coming into the Philadelphia airport and you get used to what those look like. And this looked like something different. And as I got closer and closer to it, I started seeing definition. Even though it was nighttime, it was like darker than the sky around it. And as I was passing by, I'm looking out my window up at it, and you can clearly see it was like a V shape, but one side was shorter than the other. And I saw it, I think, two or three times after that. And at the same spot too, on the turnpike 276 south, around the Willow Grove exit. And what I wonder is, if these aren't, you know, spiritual, like you were talking about, Willow Grove is right next to Horsham, Pennsylvania, and Horsham has an old Air Force base there. I've been on that. Uh-huh. I've been on that Air Force base, and it's supposedly shut down. They have some offices that are functioning in there, but they don't fly anything out of there anymore. And I also, I just wonder sometimes if it had anything to do with that Air Force base.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I told you, I did a lot of research, and black triangle or triangular shaped, or, you know, boomerang, like you saw, they're seen quite often in Pennsylvania. That's what I've seen from research that I did after I saw it last summer.
Yep.
And
just last year, there was a woman who took a photograph of what it was, more pyramid shaped. It had depth to it. It wasn't just flat. This was like a pyramid shaped UFO in right outside of Philadelphia. I think like Philadelphia skyline was in the background, kind of thing. And that was last year. And I think it was the year before, or maybe even the beginning of last year, there was a UFO sighting above the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. And it was another pyramid shaped UFO. And this was captured on video by at least two individuals, because one person was, I think he actually was in Arlington Cemetery when he saw it, and he took video of it. And then there was another video that surfaced of guys driving down the highway in their car videoing the same craft at the same time. And that happened, and you could actually see this thing rotating above the Pentagon. And it looks like identical. The very same thing happened in Philadelphia, and years ago there was one that popped up in Moscow, above the city of Moscow, and that was in broad daylight, and it was hovering there, pyramid shape, rotating. And so there's very strange things that happen in the skies, and you can't really explain it all. You know, it's very mysterious.
Yeah, that's why I think, you know, from a spiritual standpoint, I mean, I'd say percent-wise, 70% of me thinks it's like demonic or angelic, and 30%, I do believe maybe it is extraterrestrials, you know, from another planet or whatever. But I mostly believe it's a spiritual being, you know. That's why, because, you know, we've been seeing it, right, forever, and no one's ever actually taken video inside of it. I mean, if it was an actual extraterrestrial, we would have had hardcore evidence by now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I don't really believe it's a physical being. Like, it's like it could disappear, because, you know, you have heard of sightings where they just disappear out of thin air.
Yeah, and you know, with the spiritual side of things, when it comes to ET and stuff, it's interesting because extraterrestrials, from what you hear with people's stories, almost every close encounter, it's physical, but it's also, in a sense, interdimensional, where these things appear and disappear. And if you think about it, if it's extraterrestrial traveling through space, they would have to have some kind of technology we don't have to get here in their lifetime, because space is so big. So if you attribute the idea of ET being interdimensional, well, it goes right along with what you're saying, demonic entities being interdimensional, right? I mean, people come across demonic entities and they see these things and then they disappear, or they come through walls. They're clearly, their ability seems to be in a parallel universe almost, where they can go in and out. And so it really kind of falls right in line with what you were describing your thoughts as.
Yeah, because like in that movie, The Fourth Kind, you know, Dr. Abigail Tyler, when they abduct her daughter, she tells the sheriff, August, that, you know, the girl, that the aliens just took her through the wall, you know, like, and then, you know, the sheriff looks at her like she's crazy, you know, and it's like, yeah, it's crazy because what else could do that than a spiritual being, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, it's so interesting because people talk about, could these be human beings from the future? And that's what we look like. And it's just like, there's so many different theories you can go down. And when you talk about human beings being interdimensional, we have what we'll just call conspiracy theory. I personally believe it actually happened. But I don't know if you've ever heard of the Philadelphia experiment, but the story goes that they were able to, I think they were trying to do, they were trying to make a ship go invisible. And instead of making it go invisible, they actually teleported it to a bay in Virginia. And when it came back, supposedly the sailors were like either dead or alive and infused into the ship. Like there was, they got like caught up in their physical body got kind of infused. And unfortunately, when this happened, it was so long ago that any sailor that would have been on that ship is dead. I've looked into it. You can't find anybody that can talk about it from firsthand experience. And so it's hard to get really a good idea as to what actually happened. But it's interesting. Like I feel like a lot of this stuff kind of parallels and intertwines with each other. And that's why I look at this stuff and I'm fascinated by it.
So maybe they use teleportation. You know, those teleportation to where like they just go from one part of the planet, or they can just easily teleport. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they have technology to where they didn't just go through the walls. They teleported to where they use some sort of machinery that just magically went somewhere else.
Right. I mean, there's tons. I mean, this is right up my alley. I mean, there's tons of stories and theories and rumors out there that, you know, we have crafts that can do things similar to that on a smaller scale. Like, and I don't believe this, what I'm about to say, but there is a story out there that we have access to a craft that can travel so fast. It's basically what you see on video. Last year, video came out that the military released of these UFOs that they caught on film while they're flying in the sky. And these the thing would zoom off to the location that the planes were going to within like an instant. And people say that was actually our own crafts, and that this is where I kind of believe that, but this is where I'm not sure if I believe it or not. They say that when Donald Trump was doing the whole stuff with North Korea, one of the things that he did to show force of power to, you know, allow Kim Jong-un to have him cross the border was he himself rode in one of these things and in an instant was outside the capital of North Korea showing off their technology. And I was like, this is crazy. Like, now you lost me.
that sounds like fake news. That's what that sounds like.
Yeah, it does.
It's entertaining, though.
It's entertaining. But, yeah.
Yeah, I when I heard that, I was like, I don't know about that. But the guy I heard that from, I believe, is a disinformation agent to begin with. That's why I never published the story and I never talked about it on my other show, because I don't really give it truth. The guy that spoke about it, I did a little looking into him, and it seems like he's somebody who's been put into place by whoever to go around and spread disinformation about sensitive topics like the UFOs and things like that.
He's like into the fake news thing.
Well, no, he
creates the fake.
Yeah,
news.
Like, I mean, he gets his orders from higher ups, and he goes and talks about, like, I could have had this guy on my show, but I don't trust enough. I don't trust him, his stories, or I don't feel comfortable talking to him. I don't want to be intertwined with the guy.
I understand. Because there are some people out there that are, you know, you don't know if they're crazy or you know, if they're just lying or whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, this guy has ties with the government. I mean, he worked for the government, and now supposedly he's on these quote-unquote special missions of, you know, revealing truth. And it's like, I looked into the guy. I think more than likely he's being given orders to go out and spread this false information, tying it in with little, like, if you take truth and you tie it in with false information, it discredits the whole story. So what he was doing was he was taking the reality that we have these videos that they released to the public of these crafts that were showing up on video and flying in ways that we can't do. And he was peppering that with absurd stories to discredit the entire thing. What I find interesting is the government released those videos. They're the ones that came out with those videos. And then
because they always, the government, since the Roswell crash, they're always, you know, making up, trying to make up lies and other stories and stuff.
They're always trying to push you away from the truth. And you can't always do that in obvious ways of, like, none of it's true, don't believe any of it. Like, when you tell people none of it's true, don't believe any of it, they're going to look into it. And
well, what they're doing too is they're asking you not to believe your own eyes.
Right.
I mean, that's just, you know, you see something, you know, you saw it, you know. You may not be able to explain. And that's the beauty of, you know, that right now where we are in history, that's kind of the beauty of all this stuff.
Yeah.
Is we don't really have an answer for any of it. So we can muse about it. We can talk about it. We can, you know, and really right now, everybody's opinion is valid, you know, because there's no explanation to it. There's no real way of, you know, so we talk about it. And that is how we come to different conclusions. That's how we, you know, we ferret out what's true and what's not. And we look at these things and we talk about them and you know, what seems to be the most logical thing that this is or that is or whatever subject we're talking about when it comes to things that are not explained, you know. I think your story here is it's extremely interesting. It's fascinating, you know, because you know, I mean, I'll say I've had my own experience when I was a lot younger. And so I know what you mean by, you know, you try and look at something like this and you're like, what did I see? Yeah. You know, and you're trying to explain it to yourself, much less try to explain it to somebody else. I mean, I totally understand the, you know, your reasoning behind that. You know, it's like, who's going to believe me? You know, that is just where things are. But I think your story is fascinating. I really do. I think it's really an interesting, it's a real interesting story.
And that was actually because, you know, when I saw it last year, I was only a truck driver for 2 years. This year, I've been a driver now for over 3.5 years. But my dream of, you know, getting into this industry was to one day see a UFO, because, you know,
really
has a better chance than truck drivers and plane, you know, airplane pilots, because we're out, you know, always outside all the time, you know. And it came true, you know, last summer when I saw it, it's like my dream came true. I actually saw a UFO.
That's really cool.
So you got in the industry because you wanted to get paid for UFO hunting.
Well, I mean, it was mostly the money, you know, because before I did this, I was a pharmacy technician. You know, I went from doing that only making like $26,000 a year to now making like almost $70,000 a year being a truck driver. So, you know, it was mostly because of the money. That's the reason why, you know, make more money and stuff.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, if you have the opportunity to make that kind of jump in your pay, yeah. I don't know anybody who wouldn't take it, unless you're scared to drive.
I actually do know a lot of people who won't take that leap. that's the sad thing.
I
look at it. Yeah,
it's crazy because since I've been doing this, I've been eating at, you know, places I'd never ate at before, and, you know, taking family and friends with, like, Red Lobster. I just went there 2 or 3 days ago, and I have never eaten there in my life until, you know, in 2018, and I've been going, you know, every 5-6 months since then, because I finally have the money to go there. Right. You know,
you can live.
It's a good feeling, and that's what's nice about, you know, the industry, but just in general life, is when you find a groove that actually provides provides a lifestyle that you've dreamt of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not like we're trying to be rich and famous. Mm-hmm. It's just, it allows you to take care of your family and, you know, live a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, that's one of the things that strikes me as odd nowadays is, I mean, you know what this job pays. I know what this job pays. Tony knows what this job pays. And you try and express that to people. And why do we still have a shortage in the trucking industry of drivers?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the things that you look at. It's like, this is a really good paying job. Yeah, I know sometimes, you know, when you first get into the industry, you're away from home and stuff like that. And I know that can be difficult, but it's a good paying job. And when you consider what your other options are, I look at it like, this is a, you know, I mean, here I am. I'm 52. I don't have a college degree. I'm not running around, you know, I didn't go to college. I have a high school diploma. That's what I've got, you know, and here I am, you know, making 90 a year, you know, that's just the way it is. And so that's why when I talk to young people, guys or girls, you know, if they don't know what to do with their lives and they're like, you know, we're just kind of shooting the breeze or whatever. It's like, hey, did you ever think about driving truck? You know, it's not a bad living. It's a good job. And, you know, once you're in the industry for a little bit of time, you can, you know, find a job that's a your home every day type of job, like what Tony and I do. And so that's one of those things I look at. And, you know, just on the industry side of things, I am always wondering why people have such a I don't want to say disdain, but
aversion,
but kind of an aversion. Yeah, it's a good word, an aversion to it, because it's like, you know, it's a good job.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
I think the vehicles are just intimidating at first. When I first started driving CDL, I actually got my CDL when I was in my early 20s doing school bus driving, and I remember sitting down on the school bus to actually drive it for the first time. And my first time pushing an air brake, it was nerve wracking. Because it's just so foreign to me.
Right.
And I was nervous, but you get used to it. And I think I think people have a hard time sometimes taking that first step into doing it. And I tell people, even school bus driving is a great opportunity to make a good part-time living driving school buses, but especially for moms who have their kids during the day, or dads, and retired people. But the idea of driving something so big is intimidating for people.
Yeah, my mom actually, she was about to get her CDL to be a bus driver, a school bus driver, because she did it way back in the 70s or 80s. But then, you know, the virus broke out, and so they ended up laying her off. So she ended up not getting into it again.
Yeah, I recently saw school buses going out again and stuff for a school year, and I've been seeing signs at these bus depots saying hiring drivers, and I was thinking about it. I was like, you know, I wonder if they're having a hard time hiring people right now because of the uncertainty when it comes to the schooling. I mean, if we're going to have shutdowns, does that mean that people are going to get laid off from school bus driving? Will you be brought back? I wonder if they're having a hard time having people come in through the door, because, you know, a year ago, before this all hit in 2020, school bus driving was one of those jobs where they could never have enough drivers. There was just always openings. And I wonder if they're going to have a hard time filling those seats now. Did you ever consider doing local driving? I know you do over the road and stuff now. Is it like a goal of yours to get into a local company and be home every day, or do you like living out on the road?
Well, I live in Dallas, so my driving record would go to hell if I drove through here every day. It's not like I'm like a hillbilly, like one of those hillbilly drivers, and live out in the middle of nowhere. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I just, you know, scared of doing it, you know, because of everything that goes on here. And
yeah.
Well, so
there's the, you know, word of advice, because I know you're relatively a newer driver to the industry. If you go local and you're worried about that, I would look for an LTL carrier that has nighttime driving for their line haul. Because then all you would be doing is going from terminal to terminal. And, you know, some of the terminals are in bigger cities and stuff, but at least you know your route and you're just going to the terminal. You're not driving all over the city trying to do deliveries and all that stuff. You're just going from terminal to terminal. I understand how you feel, though. I mean, I drive around doing deliveries, and, you know, it can get, and we're in the Philadelphia area, so it's a bigger city as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Philadelphia, it could be pretty scary driving through there in a semi.
Yeah, it sure can.
Yeah, I think the scariest place besides New York City is Chicago, because they have a lot of low bridges there in Chicago.
Yeah, I've never driven Chicago.
Yeah, I actually drove through a bridge just last week. It said 13.4, and, you know, the truck semis are supposedly 13.6, and, like, I had nowhere else to go, so I took the risk. I dumped my airbags, like, you know, you can let your air out and lower the truck or whatever.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I went super slow, only like 1 mile an hour, put my four ways on, and I still made it under the bridge.
Well, that's good.
You know, I didn't get stuck, thank God.
You got that right.
You were probably sweating bullets.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get like a $10,000 fine if I get stuck under this bridge, or, you know, but I got through it. But yeah, Chicago is like the only city that my company really goes through that's like not a trucker friendly area. I mean, we don't go to New York City, thank God. But my company doesn't take loads there. But yeah, Chicago is like the only place I'm really just horrified, or, you know, look at my GPS real well before I try to go down it.
So with your GPS, do you use a commercial GPS, or do you just use a normal, you know,
like your phone?
I use a normal one. I tried to get a truck GPS at Best Buy, but they were like, well, we don't have those. And they were saying something about that they have to make an appointment. And it's like, I don't have time for all that. You know, I'm gone most of the time.
Right.
Yeah, I used to have a commercial GPS. I bought it when I first started driving trailer, and I barely ever used it. And so I actually recently just sold it to a guy, and he's like, is it handy? I'm like, yes, give me your money.
Is it handy? Oh, yeah. Let me tell you what, when I first started driving truck, we didn't have GPS. We had maps.
He had stone tablets. He had stone tablets. They had to chisel it into the stone.
That's all I had was maps. Yeah. 1993.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the maps.
It's just different, you know.
I had a Philadelphia maps in my truck, a big thick book of it, and just this week I decided to throw it out.
Oh, why would you do that?
Got rid of it because I didn't want it anymore.
Nostalgia,
just taking up space in my truck.
That is nostalgia.
Yeah,
that's horrible.
Got rid of it.
But no, I mean, I am so glad that things have progressed to where they are, where you know, GPS is there, because I mean, I would have love to have GPS back when.
Oh, I probably would have been fired if I didn't have a GPS to help me on the road. I probably would have, you know, done something, you know, or something horrible. You know what I mean? Because GPS, like you said, it makes it way easier.
It does. It really does.
You know, I think that, Google, if they would realize the money pit they're sitting on that they don't even realize, because they have the Google Maps, and the Google Maps are great. And they have all these cars all over the country driving around, mapping the roads, taking video. So like anytime you want to go somewhere, you can actually do the street view and see exactly what the signs are on that road. If you can go down there as a truck, if they would take all that data and turn it into an additional Google Maps app
for truckers,
where it had the height bridges and all that stuff, they would make a killing, because they could charge $200, $300 for that app, and truckers would pay for that.
Yep.
They would pay for it because it'll be constantly updated to, you know, everything.
Let's not get carried away. It doesn't have to be $200. We could make it $100. You know, $100 a year for the app. I mean,
true.
But
I mean,
but still, I know it would be good.
I can't remember how much the commercial GPSs were when I bought it, but I know it was at least $200-$300. I had a Garmin, and I barely used it. But if they would make a commercial GPS app from Google, that would be, you got millions of truckers out there that probably would pay for it, just so that it's there. It's constantly there. You don't have to worry about plugging into a computer to update your maps. It just does it itself. And I think it would be a great option for them.
I agree.
So you're out driving the roads and stuff. Do you go all over the country, or do you kind of stick to a certain region?
Well, mostly 75% of the time, they'll have me in the northern half of the country, you know, like in Nebraska, driving through up through Illinois and then Wyoming and stuff, and which is pretty, you know, scary and kind of annoying because in the wintertime, that's like the worst place to be.
Well, but, you got that right.
But mostly they'll have me up there driving through the northern states, Utah and Oregon and Pennsylvania. But sometimes they'll have me, I go through like, I was actually pretty shocked. I drove through Alabama like 3 or 4 times this year. I mean, normally I've never driven through, you know, those states this many times in a year before. So I've been going a couple times through Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana. You know, because mostly because I'm going down to Florida, you know,
yeah,
and stuff.
So, but, with your truck, I'm assuming it's a company truck, or are you leasing your truck, or how's that work?
Oh no, I'm company. Yeah, I'm company.
So they take care of the maintenance and everything for you?
Oh yeah, yeah, they take care of all that.
That's good. So, when you're up, you know, dealing with snow and stuff, you usually have fresh tires on there. You don't have to worry about the low tread or anything like that.
Oh no, no, no. Yeah, they really good at keeping it together, and I'll check the thread. You know, I've actually had the tires exchanged a couple times at truck stops because I noticed that the tread is practically almost gone, and then breakdown will allow them to you know, put another tire on there.
That's good. So they're not picky about it.
No, they're not.
What kind of freight are you hauling?
Mostly refrigerated food because I drive reefer.
So with reefer and stuff, when I go to a place and, you know, I just do like, I'll have a pallet or something but I'll go to places that have giant warehouses that are filled with reefer, you know, truckers and stuff and docks. It always seems to me like when you're in reefer, it takes forever to get unloaded. Is that the case?
Well, yeah. I mean, sometimes like just a week ago, I was in North Carolina and it took them literally 8 hours to load me. But they ended up giving me like almost $100 in detention pay. You know, I fill out a detention form and they'll give you detention pay. So you're not just sitting there not making any kind of money, you know, but what they do, they pay us because like Crete is part of our company, but they pay them, you know, about 4 or 5 cents less than Shaper because they do way more drop and hooks because they're dry load. But since we're refrigerated and we're going to be doing more sitting around, we get paid like about 5 cents more than they do. So, and then even though we get paid more and they get paid less, we still pretty much make kind of equal salary because they're doing more driving because they're not sitting around as much. You know what I mean?
Right. So, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So, you're driving for about what you said, a little more than 3 years.
Yeah. Like over 3.5 years now.
Okay. In that time, have you come across any situations that you're just like, wow, I can't believe I got through that one? Like, you know, close accident call, or did you see any bad accidents?
Well, like I said, just like last week, I was driving through a bridge that I shouldn't even have been able to drive under. And that was like, wow, you know, I actually drove under that. I didn't get stuck. So, yeah. But besides that, not really anything else recently.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah,
definitely.
So, does your company do like safe driving awards and stuff? Cause I know you mentioned about your record, if you were more local and stuff, do you get rewarded for, you know, a certain amount of miles driving safely?
Like I'll get like my safety record right now is -5. And like, if you go through a whole year of not having any accidents, they'll give you 5 more points to add to your safety record. So basically if I had like a positive 12 points on my safety record, that's usually, you know, grounds where they might terminate you. But, you know, I'm far from 12. I'm at -5 right now. So it'll, you know, I have to do something pretty, you know, bad in order to be fired right now with my, you know, number where it is.
No, that's good. That's really good.
Yeah.
So if I'm hearing you right, -5 is a good thing then, because
the lower your number, the better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. The lower, the better.
So a negative equals a positive.
Yeah. Yeah. So if they put like, if we were to get like a DOT violation, that's 12 points, but I'd still be, you know, with the -5, I'd be like at 7. So it's still not like, you know, grounds for termination, you know?
Good.
Yeah. So, you know, you're driving and stuff. When you got your license, though, did you have any hesitations about getting into the industry? I mean, going from what you were doing to going to truck driving, was there something inside of you that was just like, I don't know if this is the right move, I'm going to do it? Or were you jumping in, you know, right away, all the way?
Well, when I first started in 2017, the first couple months, you know, I was pretty, you know, thinking, oh, is this going to work out? Because actually, I started out with Stevens Transport in Dallas, or like a school that helped you get your CDL.
Yep.
And they actually put me on their, I can't remember what it was called, but it was some sort of thing to where like if I kept, you know, doing stuff, they would actually terminate me. I can't remember what it's called. You know, it's been over 3 years since they put it on me, because, you know, when I first, but anyways, I ended up getting myself together, you know, and I stopped having incidents, you know, and they ended up not firing me. I ended up making it through a year, and then I got the hell out of there, because, you know, you don't make any money if you stay with them, you know?
Right.
And I can't remember what, like I said, because it's been over 3 years since they put it on me, so I can't remember what it's called. But the safety manager, when I went back, you know, they put me on that probably around June of 2017. And then I remember that by November, that one of the safety managers was pretty impressed that, you know, I got myself together and I wasn't having any more incidents, you know. And, but, you know, just like any job, right? I mean, your first 6 months, it's going to be hell on earth because you're new, you know?
Yeah.
Any job.
And with the trucking industry, you're getting the crappier runs, and, you know, crappier meaning either, you know, maybe bad mileage or maybe bad areas. And that's where incidents happen. And, you know, I talk to drivers where I work that are looking to go from a class B to a class A, from straight truck to trailer. And, you know, one of their biggest things is they're really nervous about driving the big trailer. And, you know, I, like I said earlier stuff, I tell them, you know, it's like you were when you were driving, you know, a car to go to a box truck, you're a little nervous about it. You know, it's a bigger vehicle. It's the same thing. But I know the company probably wouldn't appreciate me saying this to them, but I always tell them, like, incidents happen. Like, if you think you're going to drive, if you're going to get your class A and you're going to drive 25, 30 years and never have anything happen to you or that truck, the odds of that are very slim. The key is to make sure the incident isn't awful, or at least not your fault. Right. So, I mean, cause things are going to happen, cause you're out on the road and you're driving around a bunch of other people who all have their own will to do whatever they want with those little cars. And so things happen sometimes. And I just try to tell drivers it's not the end of the world when your first incident happens. Just make sure it's not either not your fault, or it was like, you know,
it won't kill you.
Yeah. You hit a curb and blew a tire, and it wasn't that you took a turn too sharp and ran over a Cadillac. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know what you mean.
But yeah, man, listen, I appreciate you coming on the show. I mean, it was really an interesting story with the UFO.
Yeah. And I hope, because, you know, I'm prepared this time. I have binoculars. And actually, since I saw that last year, you know, every time I see something weird in the sky, I'll actually pull off if it's safe, you know, I'll pull off and look at it with the binoculars and see, because, you know, seeing that, you know, it's just gotten me to where I actually, you know, want to be more prepared next time. Yeah. You know, but of course, but then even if I see it, you know, there will be times anyways, or I won't be able to, because it might be in like at a big city, you know, or something. So,
but. Yeah.
But you know what? The chances of you seeing something are greater if you're paying attention and, you know, looking for it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things is that, you know, there are people who walk through life and never see anything like this at all. And it's because they're not looking for anything at all. They have no interest. You know what I mean? They're kind of walking through life, just kind of doing their thing. But once you see something like this, it draws you. It kind of gets your attention to looking for those things, you know?
It makes you want to go to Area 50. Be one and be one of the people out there day and night.
Exactly. It does. Yeah. I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean.
You know, did you hear about that that thing that was going on last year with the Area 51? They were planning on storming it.
Yes. Yeah. And it was so crazy. It was like, Yeah, like they're not going to survive that, you know.
That'd be my concern. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually interviewed the guy who organized that. And I asked him, I was like, so is this serious, man? Or are you? And he's like, dude, I was just making something, just goofing around. And it grew legs and
got now, a life of its
yeah,
own.
Yeah. And so now he's like, now I'm organizing an event there. We're going to have food there, music, and all that stuff. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool, you know? And from what I understand, when they did go, but only like one person got arrested for doing something stupid. Everybody was pretty much civil and tame.
Yeah. Because they don't want to ruin their lives. You know, they probably have children or
jobs and
stuff.
Life. Yeah, exactly.
It's
life
one thing,
is still happening.
Yeah. It's one thing to say on the internet, on Facebook. Yeah, I'll go and we'll storm it. Yeah.
We'll crash the gate and we'll do this. Yeah. Until it comes time to do it. You realize, look, I'm married. I have kids. Yep. I have a job. I've got, like you said, I've got bills to pay. So let's calm down.
Now they're all there. They're standing along the fence. They're looking in and they're like, who's going first?
Yeah.
And then Larry decided to go first and then he gets jumped and everybody's like, okay, back to the food truck.
Oh, is that the guy who organized it? The one that went in first?
Well, no. I was just using a hypothetical, but the guy who organized it, his name was Matt. And I think he was from California and he just randomly made the Facebook, because what happened is on Joe Rogan's podcast, he had a guy on, Bob Lazar, and Bob Lazar was talking about what the crafts were that he worked on in Area 51. And because that came out and it was such a huge interview, people were listening to it all over, this guy Matt decided to create a Facebook group called Storm Area 51. And then before you knew it, I think he had like hundreds of thousands of people saying they were going to the event. I'm thinking to myself, my gosh, like if people would actually show up, that'd be crazy. And I think they had a lot of people, but not hundreds of thousands.
Right.
But the locals to that area were not happy about it because like, it was way too many people.
Yeah, it draws a crowd.
The infrastructure wasn't there to support it, you know? But it's interesting stuff. People see stuff in the sky. Truckers see a lot of stuff in the sky. And man, I appreciate you coming on and talking with us.
Oh, sure. I appreciate you having me. This is the first and only interview I've had about this. So it's pretty interesting. Like I said, that guy that I was in the Boy Scouts with 15 years ago told me about y'all. And so that's why I emailed.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad you did. We really are. It was really cool to talk with you. We had a good time. It was our pleasure.
Well, that's the show, everybody. We really hope you enjoyed it. And Dad, what can they do if they enjoyed the show?
They can share it. I know we say it every week in, week out. We're going to say it again this week. Share the show. Share it with your friends, with your family. Share it on Facebook and Twitter, and especially go to Instagram. Check
Instagram
out Hammer Lane Legends at Instagram, I guess, is that's how we do it.
Yeah.
Just I have no idea.
Just look up Hammer Lane Legends on Instagram.
That's an old man trying to talk tech.
I have the guy promoting social media and he has no idea how to use it. He's like, just push the power button for Facebook. It's there somewhere.
What is this Instagram thing?
Instagram or what?
But no, check us out on Instagram. We'd love to hear from you and have you, you know, check us out.
Yeah, and we just broke 800 followers this week on Instagram. We're at 801 as we record this. Let's try to shoot for the magnificent 1,000 people following us on Instagram. Let's shoot for November 1st.
That would be cool.
I know it's right around the corner and stuff, but
it's
hey,
a week away.
Miracles can happen.
It's literally a week away.
Miracles
Sunday.
Happen. Hey, I believe in miracles. Do you?
Me too.
All right. Well, let's do it then. If you're on Instagram, please give us a follow. Look us up on Instagram at Hammer Lane Legends. Just Hammer Lane Legends. Look us up and give us a follow. And we certainly do appreciate it.
He does that much better than I do.
Well, I've had a lot of practice. I think it was a good show this week. I think it was a little bit of a change of pace with a UFO encounter and stuff. But, you know, I think it was worth talking. And, you know, it was fun talking to him.
It was. And it's always worth. It's always worth talking to people. You know, love to hear their stories, you know, their perspective on things, whether they're a driver or not or any of those things. You know, that's all. You know, kind of that's what we're here for, is just talk to people.
Absolutely. And go to the website, hammerlanelegends.com, and hit the gear section and purchase a hoodie, t-shirts. I actually, Dad, found a website that does trucker hats that will custom print the logo on a leather patch. Yeah, I think it looks pretty cool.
On a leather patch.
Yeah,
that's neat.
I sent it to Jack and he liked it, so I'm going to look into it more and stuff. So stay tuned for that. But go ahead and check out the gear section. We have hoodies, t-shirts, stickers, and more stuff to come as we go. But until next week, friends, keep the hammer down in the hammer lane.
Well, the midnight headlights blind you on a rainy night. Steep grade up ahead, slow me down, making no time. But I gotta keep rolling. Those windshield wipers slapping out of tempo, keeping perfect rhythm with the song on the radio. Yeah, I gotta keep rolling. Ooh, I'm driving my life away, looking for a better way for me. Ooh, I'm driving my life away, I'm looking for a sunny day. She was just a baby. Hey, waitress, pour me another cup of coffee. Pop it down, jack me up, shoot me out, flying down the highway. I'm looking for the morning. Ooh, I'm driving my life away, I'm looking for a better way. Song on the radio. Lord, I gotta keep it.